Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.
Good morning and welcome to the BizNews Daybreak. Today is Thursday, the 13th of August. I'm Kerry Lanigan. First up, Bloomberg News Now with the latest overnight world news.
So-called core U.S. inflation was subdued in the month of July, and that in turn eases pressure on the Fed. We had the consumer price index minus food and energy cost rising last month at a rate of 0.2% compared to June. If you look at it on an annual basis, core CPI rose in July by 2.5%. We got reaction from PIMCO economist Tiffany Wilding.
I think overall, this plus the the softer CPI print last month, has to be a little bit of a relief for Fed officials. Good news for them. At the same time, though, some of the more hawkish members on the committee, we doubt it really changes their minds.
That is PIMCO economist Tiffany Wilding speaking earlier to Bloomberg. Due tomorrow, the report on U.S. producer prices for July. After the bell, Cisco Systems reported sales for the latest quarter above estimates. Even so, some investors felt the numbers failed to live up to the hype. More from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Investors had high expectations for the world's largest maker of networking equipment following blowout results in the previous period. Cisco has been restructuring in an attempt to score more contracts tied to the global build-out of data systems used in AI. David Bahnsen is chief investment officer of the Bahnsen Group.
The hyperscaler orders were strong. It's clearly become an AI story more than we like. But no one can complain. It's now compounded at 15% a year in the time we've owned it.
Cisco is also coming up against increasing competition from the likes of Broadcom and Hewlett-Packard Enterprise.
We turn next to Washington, where White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt will be stepping down from her post at the end of the month. President Trump announced the move today on Truth Social, saying Leavitt wants to spend more time with her family. Trump said she will continue advising him from outside the White House as Republicans prepare for the midterm elections. Trump did not name a successor to that post. Trump also said the U.S. has total control over the Strait of Hormuz, even though Iran continues to challenge shipping through this critical waterway. Bloomberg's Tyler Kendall has more from the White House.
It's very evident that both sides are trying to dig into their positions when it comes to the Strait of Hormuz, but there's very little sign that Iran is going to give up the leverage it has when it comes to the waterway, not just in terms of its grip on shipping in Hormuz, but also importantly, we should point out the other disruptions to global shipping. As earlier today, Yemen's government confirmed that at least 6 people died in a Houthi attack in the Red Sea, marking the first such fatalities of a Houthi attack since this specific conflict has started.
That is Bloomberg's Tyler Kendall reporting from the White House. Now, before the war with Iran began, the Strait of Hormuz carried about 1/5 of global oil and LNG flows. Today, the oil market dealt with some opposing forces. On one hand, stasis in efforts to reopen the strait, and on the other, the Energy Information Administration reporting a build in U.S. crude inventories. Meantime, Iran is reorganizing its military for what could be a longer confrontation with the U.S. and Israel. A senior IRGC advisor says the country is moving away from a primary defensive posture toward an offensive doctrine.
Political analyst Prince Mashele doesn't mince words. At BNC 9 in the Drakensberg, the author of The Fall of the ANC laid out his case for why the party is in terminal decline and what he thinks should replace it. The full video is on biznews.com.
The first thing about the bigger picture is that the ANC will decline across the board. I've not seen any poll that suggests that the ANC after the elections would have gained. So it will decline. It's a foregone conclusion. That decline is not a momentary decline. It is actually what we predicted in the book, The Fall of the ANC, which we wrote in 2012, and it came out in 2014, that the ANC at the time is in the process of dying. So those of you who love the ANC, bid it goodbye. There will be no ANC in the South African government after the 2034 elections. There will be no ANC. The ANC will not be part of the South African government in 2034. Those of you as old as I am, I think you'll still be alive. And if this news is still going, call me and ask me, what did you say that year? So the ANC will decline. Two, the DA will gain relatively marginally. And the polls that were quoted by last night tell us the DA at the national level will sit around the upper 20s, 27%. The biggest gain of the DA will be in Johannesburg. In fact, Johannesburg is actually the biggest deal in these elections. For understandable reasons, Johannesburg is our industrial economic capital. So if Johannesburg falls apart, the whole of the South African economy literally falls apart. And all of us will be trying to stampede into the Western Cape. And down there, there is no space. You can't fit all of us.
Also from BNC9, Rob Hersov on why South Africa isn't broadly investable. His focus, the illicit economy, which SARS puts at 12 to 15% of GDP. Hersov thinks the real number is closer to 20. Check out biznews.com for more.
I follow BizNews. All the podcasts, I read all the articles, I've penned a few. But I also read, and I know we're not supposed to mention competitors, Newsday, because it's very easy to read. It's just a whole bunch of headlines. And the headlines are generally very depressing. I'll just take you 2 days last week. One, a man made R1 million a month selling bread to South African prisons and never owned a bakery. The Eastern Cape gave one company R3.4 billion in travel and accommodation contracts. And here's my favorite. The Defense Department spent R27.8 million on pothole machines, Defense Department, in 2021. By last month, not one pothole had been repaired by them. And I can go on and on and on. You know this. And, you know, with deranged ideologies that the ANC has, there I'm going at it again, BEE, which is theft, EWC, which is theft, you know, I can't say that it's South Africa is broadly investable. And if I was a Martian looking at Earth and I had a year 2000, I learned everything about the Earth, and then I looked at 2026, where would I allocate my money? Maybe I'd allocate 1% of my Martian portfolio to Africa. But I wouldn't, if I looked at South Africa in the year 2000 and today, invest a cent in this country, not 1 cent. Do you know we're at the same wealth level per capita today as we were in 2007? We've gone nowhere. And worst of all, this is SARS numbers, so I'm sure it's much higher. SARS told Parliament that the illicit economy in South Africa is 12 to 15% of GDP. So I reckon it's 20%. A fifth of our GDP is gangster and mafia. And it's sophisticated, if you listen to Dean McPherson. That's about a trillion a year in illicit, criminal, and untaxed commerce. And call it what you want. It's thieves, gangsters, tenderpreneurs, political fixers, bleeding the country to death. And we're not growing. We're at 1% economic growth. So take another fifth of that. And corporate South Africa knows this. Corporate South Africa has 1.8 trillion rand sitting in its bank deposits, money it is not investing. What do they know that we don't know? They know what we know. They're not investing it in this country. Now, they need buffers, cash buffers, but I think 1.8 trillion is a bit much. Over 1,300 businesses were liquidated in the first half of this year. 1,300 companies. And even if Helen Zille, a BizNews regular, a rock star, a heroine, a lioness, if she wins Johannesburg, which everyone thinks she will, what hope in hell does she have to actually fix it?
Healthcare matters, but what matters most?
Having cover for the people who keep this business going.
Bonitas is there for you when it counts. Bonitas, medical aid for South Africa. Visit bonitas.co.za and find your plan.
To global markets. NVIDIA has unveiled a $500 billion AI infrastructure plan, pulling in some of Wall Street's biggest names to fund it. Bloomberg's Michelle Davis reports.
This week, NVIDIA unveiling a $500 billion plan for AI infrastructure, and it tapped six of the biggest names in finance to help. The list includes some of the world's biggest asset managers, Apollo, BlackRock, Blackstone, Brookfield, KKR, and Goldman Sachs. The idea is they'll pull together money from third-party investors to help fund the build-out of AI infrastructure. This is by far the biggest AI financing deal to ever hit Wall Street. The exact details on the structure and timing were initially pretty slim, so the news revived concerns that NVIDIA's inflating demand for its chips through circular financing agreements. Those worries have helped its credit risk rise. But executives have clarified that NVIDIA's contribution will be pretty limited. Instead, these Wall Street firms will independently evaluate each project and decide whether to provide funding. And this probably won't end here, with Morgan Stanley predicting that AI infrastructure spending will be roughly $3.5 trillion over the next 2 years. It's clear companies are having to get creative to find cash for the AI build-out.
And we close with another BNC9 moment. Bernard Mustat on what it was really like inside Steinhoff and the late-night email that said it all. The full discussion will be on biznews.com soon.
The warning signs in terms of the cultural mismatch was there in what, let's call it the clean year, was there in 2016, because we went into Steinhoff, and I'll quickly tell two stories around it, and hopefully the crowd will find it at least entertaining. By that, I mean to say it should be funny. But so the first thing is that when we went into Steinhoff, they decided to split Bram and I. So I was given Pepco Speciality, which was a very core part of our business or our business strategy, and Bram was giving the Pepco and Steinhoff property portfolio because he loves property and he's obsessed with it. So if you want to wake him up, you want to get his attention, you just say landlord, and then he's there. So the first is that Bram had all 4,000 leases printed out, and he carried it in a book like a Bible with him. And he would work all hours of night or day, we'll get to that as well. And he had this system whereby one asterisk, gray deal, two asterisks, fair deal, we can live with it. Three asterisks, really bad deal, and four was just a WTF.
So let me understand this. 4,000 leases for all the Steinhoff properties and for the whole group.
And the Pepco leases.
And Pepco. This is what he was responsible for, and he started working through each one of them.
Every single one with those and that full grading system. So, and when he was through it, so Bram has this strange habit of working from about 10 at night until 2 in the morning. So I've also then developed the habit of kind of waking up at 1:30 and see if there's any crises. Because if I'm not answering my emails, he would phone me if it was serious enough. And often we had conversations between 1 and 2 in the morning. But I wake up to an email not addressed to me. I wake up to an email addressed to Marcus and Donnie and a few others within the fold. And I'm pretty sure if Bram had Christo's email, he would have put him in there as well. And he said, the email started like this: Mayday, mayday, we have a crisis. He said, we must immediately put a moratorium on all leasing because there are more 3 stars in WTFs than what there are 1 stars and 2 stars. And needless to say, unlike what he was used to getting from us, he didn't get an answer by 7. So 7, he replied all to his own email and said, have you read my email? So Marcus then replied and said, Bram, we don't get into this level of detail in the group. And Bram just replied to say, maybe you should. It was clear to me.
Was that true, though, that Marcus didn't get to that level of detail, that he wasn't profiting from those really bad leases?
Marcus definitely didn't get into the leases of retail properties. That I can tell you. I never saw him get in there, but then I also really didn't see a lot of him in the period that we were within Steinhoff.
That's it for this morning's BizNews Daybreak. I'm Kerry Lanigan. Thanks for listening.
Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.